Senator Latz, thank you for your patience. We're going to try to move as fast as we can this afternoon. We have to hear several bills today, and we have little time. We have caucus meeting at 2:45, so I would like to encourage the senators and the people who are here to present to try to limit your comments to 3-4 minutes and move as fast as we can. Senator Latz, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and introduce the members that are with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Ron Latz, District 44, St. Louis Park, Hopkins, and Golden Valley. I'm the Chief Senate author of Senate File 534, which reestablishes a crisis nursery grant program that was eliminated in 2003 as part of the solution to the budget crisis at that time. At that time, a lot of grant programs were consolidated into a large grant program, and then the overall funding for that grant program was cut. So programs like the Crisis Nursery Program received substantial reductions in their available funding. And as a consequence, organizations like the Minneapolis Crisis Nursery Center, which happens to be physically located at the main office in Golden Valley, but serves a much larger area, of course, ended up serving over 1,000 fewer children in need of emergency daycare services than they otherwise would have been able to adjust in the year 2004.
Senator Latz, could you please move the microphone closer to you?
Sure.
Thank you.
So we're here seeking to reestablish the Crisis Nursery Grant Program. I have with me here today Mary Pat Lee, the Executive Director from the Greater Minneapolis Crisis Nursery, and Tammy Luke, the Executive Director of Bridges of Hope in Brainerd. This is a statewide program. Obviously, there are statewide needs for these kind of emergency services, and I will let them make a presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, please.
Thank you. Proceed. Senator Torres-Redd, members of the committee, my name is Mary Pat Lee, and I'm the Executive Director of the Greater Minneapolis Crisis Nursery. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to join with my colleagues from the Minnesota Crisis Nursery Association to speak on behalf of Senate File 535, a bill that would restore desperately needed funding to crisis nursery programs around the state. The Greater Minneapolis Crisis Nursery was the first crisis nursery in Minnesota, and we continue to be the only residential facility in the state. We opened our doors almost 24 years ago in 1983, and since that time, we've provided 107,000 days of care for children, sheltered 40,000 children, responded to 68,000 crisis calls, and provided crisis counseling, parent education, and support services to more than 20,000 children in families in Hennepin County. While this represents a great deal of good work, the demand for our service is growing dramatically. In 2005, the nursery received approximately 2,500 crisis calls. In 2006, we saw that number grow to 4,900, essentially doubling. Our current fiscal year statistics also demonstrate the exploding need. At the halfway point in this year, we've provided 2,600 days of care for children, managed 2,300 crisis calls, sheltered over 1,000 children at the nursery, made referrals to over 800 families, and served 600 families who placed their children at the nursery. But even this good work was not enough. This year, because of lack of space, the nursery has been unable to provide shelter for the 300 new families that contacted us, and we've turned away 1,100 children for the same reason. While the nursery services are free, voluntary, and open to all, we know that, in fact, we're serving some of the most at-risk families in our community. Last year, 83% of these families had annual incomes of under $10,000. 93% of them were single parents. 95% of them were female. And 56% were involved with MFIP. 33% had less than a high school education. We believe that we're a vital frontline service in the battle to end child abuse and neglect in our community, and we also believe that we're an essential service for preventing abuse and neglect of children. Statistics have shown that users of crisis nursery services are less likely to become involved in the child protection system. Today, I urge you to restore the much-needed funding to the crisis nursery programs in Minnesota. The $2.2 million we're seeking represents an important investment in Minnesota families and is much less expensive than the financial and social costs to our communities when children are abused and neglected. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Torres-Reyes and the committee members, thank you as well for allowing me to come and speak from Greater Minnesota. Again, I am Tammy Lewick, and I'm the Executive Director of Bridges of Hope. Our crisis nursery program has been in existence for about the last 3 years. Our program works a little differently than the Greater Minneapolis Crisis Nursery. We use the same components, same model that all the crisis nurseries use throughout the state, but we are not a residential program. We work with three organizations locally, Bridges of Hope, Crow Wing County Social Services, and the Crisis Line Resource and Referral Network. And so we are able to offer this in our area at a really cost-effective manner. And it is not residential. We use licensed foster care homes to provide the child care. One thing that I just wanted to mention was that crisis nurseries allow parents to continue to parent their children during stressful and difficult situations. They are given safe alternatives rather than leaving their children in unsafe or inappropriate situations or considering out-of-home placement. One of our parents recently answered this question, "What would you have done without crisis nursery?" She shook her head and said, "I don't know," then continued to say that she would most likely not be working full-time, and that her son, who is in a preschool program in our area, would probably not be attending that preschool program on a regular basis. She said things would be a lot different, and she said, "I don't even want to imagine." Crisis nurseries keep children safe and protected without out-of-home placement services. Not to mention the cost savings compared to out-of-home placements, court costs, social service involvement and time, and also the time and involvement that this puts on parents. 90% of the families that have utilized crisis nursery services within our program have not had any involvement with child protection after using crisis nursery services. This is based on our follow-ups and our child protection records locally. The Minnesota Department of Health and Human Services reported in 1990 that the cost of crisis nursery services is around $120 per family versus the cost of child protection service assessments at $630 a family. I wanted to share just two brief stories if I could. Sarah was a homeless mother with two children in our area that was needing some crisis nursery care for her children. And she called. She was trying to find stable housing for that family during the daytime hours, and so she accessed and utilized one of our crisis nursery homes during the daytime hours while she found a place for that family to live. And what was really great about that was that we got to develop a relationship with that family as they were trying to, you know, find their way in our community. We were able to help introduce her to our school system locally, help her with getting the things that she needed to set up her home.
Yikes. Someone's leaning on a...
And,
thank you.
All right, thank you.
Sorry about that.
And so, you know, and that mom is now in a safe house. I mean, she's in her own home. She's living. They have set up stable housing for the family. The kids are enrolled in school, and they're doing really well. And I just wonder that without that service, if she would have been able to set that care up in a timely fashion, get the house set up and all that. So I think it's just a really important service that we offer to families. We also had a single parent mom of five children who had a serious medical emergency with one of her children and didn't have care for the other four children. And so we were able to put the children in crisis nursery care so that the mom could, so that she could be with her son that was at the hospital and those kids could be cared for while she attended to that son. So this is just a very important program. It allows us to, you know, build relationships with families needing some support. And I just hope that you'll consider supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Members of the committee, do you have any questions for Senator Latz or the people who are presenting? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Latz, I don't know a whole lot about crisis nurseries, so if you could tell me just a couple things. How is it that someone gets notified or it finds out about the service? Or is it there's some obviously some crisis that ensues? Is that through the police department, or how do they know that your service is available if they need it?
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, I'll let one of the two witnesses answer that in more detail, but my understanding is sometimes if a parent is arrested and there are kids in the house that have no place to go, the contact will be through the police department or the sheriff's office. Emergency rooms at hospitals would be another place. where they get referrals. And, of course, information is out there within the social services community. So there are a lot of different entry points where a professional that comes into contact with this family would recognize this is a situation where the children need a place to stay on an emergency basis. It could be 3 o'clock in the morning because these facilities are open 24 hours a day because emergencies don't keep to a nice 9-to-5 time schedule. See if there's anything else to add to it.
I would just echo, our placements are all voluntary. They're initiated by the parents. So while there may be some police contact, usually it's coming from an emergency room, someone at the county, or the parent themselves. We're 24 years old. We're very networked with the social service community in Hennepin County. We get a lot of referrals. 211, the United Way Helpline, does a lot of referrals to us as well.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you. It's a crisis nursery, and I see that you can take kids up to 12 years of age. Are you also finding housing or kind of some sort of for the parents as well, or facilities for them, or where do the parents go in when you're taking care of the kids?
In our program, it really depends on what the nature of the crisis is. It may be a situation where a mom is completely exhausted, afraid of what she's going to do to her children. The children come to us, and mom gets an opportunity to kind of rest and re-energize. Maybe she has children who have disabilities, and she has no one to help and support her. It could be that mom is in the hospital. We've had situations where a mom is going to have a baby and doesn't have a place to put her other children. It also could be a situation where a woman is leaving a domestic abuse situation. She can go to a shelter but wants to put her children somewhere where she feels they'll be safe in her transition. We also have people who are losing their housing, and they may go to a shelter but place the children with us while they seek housing.
Yeah, and it would be similar in our area. I mean, we would work with them. We don't have a residential facility where the parent can go to, but we may use our women. You know, we have a shelter for battered women. We also have we have a homeless shelter, and we have some other avenues that we can pursue. But it would depend on the crisis. So,
okay.
Madam Chair,
Senator Prendergast.
Madam Chair, I'd like to speak on behalf of this bill, and I'm also an author of this bill. And I can tell you from a provider's perspective that I see a number of men and women in crisis who want to be good parents. They want to do the right thing, and it's very threatening sometimes to them to think that their children might not be in their care. But these crisis nurseries provide a safe place for them to bring their children for a brief period of time, just respite, so that they can kind of regroup, get themselves on a steady basis. Maybe it's a few hours, and maybe it's a couple, 2-3 days. And they know their children are a safe place. They know that their children are coming back to them. They're not going to be taken away from them, placed in the system. So they've learned that this service is available and that they can make use of it.
Madam Chair,
Senator Dahl.
I guess a follow-up then on what you're saying. Is there the folks that you're providing the service to, are they first-time, mostly just a first-time occurrence, or is there repeat visits from the groups? And when they do come into your facility and your services, how is the follow-up as far as getting them out of that crisis situation? Where do they go from there, if I could get that information? Appreciate it.
I'd be happy to. Our license allows us to take children up to 72 hours at a time, and we will take them up to 30 days in a year. And yes, we do have some families that repeat perhaps in the year, perhaps multiple times over years. It really depends on what the challenges are that they're facing. A family that places at Greater Minneapolis Crisis Nursery, while their children go to the nursery, the parent or guardian meets with a trained social worker who will work with them to map out 2 to 3 goals that they're going to try and achieve over that 72-hour period while their children are with us, and what identify the resources they might need to achieve those goals, to kind of get beyond where they are. But we also have at Greater Minneapolis what we call the fourth day program. For families that seem to use our services significantly, they can voluntarily agree to participate in a program where a master level psychologist will go to their home at least once a week for a 12 to 18 month period and work with them on trying to figure out how you get beyond the challenging circumstances that you're currently finding yourself in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for the witness, for Senator Latz? If not, I need a motion.
Oh,
Senator Madam Chair, if you could please.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 534 be recommended to pass, and I'm not sure where it goes. To finance, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. Be re-referred to finance.
Okay. All of those, is there any discussion on that motion? If not, all of those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Latz. Thank you for your testimony. I have to move.
Senator Torres Reyes, Senate File 686.
They move the governor's bill.
Welcome. Go ahead when you're ready.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 685. I'm presenting today Senate File 686 relating to the establishment of Family, Friend, and Neighbor Grant Program. It is really a pleasure to have this opportunity for me in the Senate. I have worked with this program in the past, and I have some people with me who will be helping me give you some information about the program. The program is established to promote literacy, healthy development, school readiness, and foster community partnerships to promote school readiness. Mr. Chair and community members, family, friend, and neighbor care is informal and legal, unlicensed home-based child care provided to children under the age of 12. And I will venture to say that some of you may be family, friend, and neighbor providers yourselves. You probably have taken care of children who are relatives, friends, or neighbors of yours. Caregivers under family, friend, and neighbor include grandparents, relatives, friends, or neighbors. Family, friend, and neighbor care can take place during the day or the evening. It could take place at the child's home or at the home of the caregiver. Family, friend, and neighbor care includes free care or care that is provided for a fee. 46% of families who use some type of child care use family, friend, and neighbor care as their primary child care arrangement. It is estimated that 150,000 Minnesota households are providing family, friend, and neighbor care. This program is a necessary strategy that provides support and resources to family, friend, and neighbor caregivers. It encourages partnerships between these caregivers, public libraries, early childhood programs, and special education initiatives. With me, I have some people who are experts in the field who will be testifying and will give you more information and respond to some of the questions you may have about the grant program. First, I have Megan Waltz, and I would like to ask her to please speak about the program and the needs to fund the grant program.
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Megan Waltz. I'm the public policy analyst at Ready for K. Ready for K supports the cutting-edge work on family, friend, and neighbor issues that is happening in Minnesota, and as such supports Senate File 686. I'm here today to quickly take you through this bill. Subdivision 1 establishes a grant program for those community-based and nonprofit organizations and tribes working with family, friend, and neighbor child care providers. Subdivision 2 discusses program components. Grantees will provide culturally appropriate services specifically for family, friend, and neighbor providers, which support their education and training in areas such as health, safety, nutrition, and school readiness. Grantees will be expected to provide family, friend, and neighbor caregivers with information on early childhood screening, as well as other relevant early child care services, including financial aid opportunities available within the local community, thus giving the family, friend, and neighbor caregiver the tools that he or she may need to connect the families they serve with services within the community. Grantees may also use funds to provide play and learn groups, transportation, translation needs, outreach, and administrative costs. Subdivision 2 also describes that a portion of grant funds must be awarded to fund partnerships with libraries and other relevant organizations to provide early literacy programs for family, friend, and neighbor providers in low-income and tribal communities. Subdivision 3 explains the procedure for applications through the Department of Human Services in the form and manner determined by the commissioner. And Subdivision 4 determines that the commissioner, in consultation with early childhood education and care experts at the University of Minnesota, will evaluate the impact of these grants as explained in Subdivision 2. Section 2 is the appropriation section for the grants. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wells.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gretchen Ronka. I'm the Youth Services and Outreach Coordinator for the Hennepin County Library System. And I want to tell you this afternoon that Minnesota's librarians are ready for this legislation. In 2005 and 2006, library staff from across the state participated in very intensive training funded by a federal grant through the State Library Agency. We learned how to incorporate the six skills that you have in your packets and your lives, I'm sure, that children need to learn to be successful readers before they start school. We've incorporated these skills into our traditional library programs like preschool story times. Accessing the grant funds described by Megan in Subdivision 2.20 through 2.28 of this bill will allow librarians to go a step farther in partnership with child care providers and the other organizations working with them. We're primed to use a model early literacy training curriculum developed for parents and caregivers that's available in both Spanish and English. This curriculum is based on research by the National Institute of Child Health and Development. It was adapted for use by librarians by Dr. Grover Whitehurst and Dr. Christopher Lonigan, well-known researchers in emergent literacy. Minneapolis Public Library and Hennepin County Library were among 14 public libraries across the nation invited to test and pilot these tools. The audience for our pilot project in Hennepin County was child care providers receiving our children's Readmobile service. Hennepin County Library and Minneapolis Public Library's outcomes mirrored the national results of the project in an evaluation funded by the Public Library Association, the Association for Library Service to Children, which are divisions of the American Library Association. And the results indicated that these librarian-presented workshops did help caregivers become more effective first teachers of the children in their care. They incorporated needed literacy skill-building activities into their daily routine with preschoolers. This legislation will also enable librarians to provide more beautifully written and illustrated children's books that reflect the racial, ethnic, and language diversity of Minnesota that can be easily enjoyed by children and caregivers. Providing school readiness opportunities for children and quality training for their caregivers who live in remote areas is another priority in this legislation. On White Earth Reservation, a children's Readmobile early literacy and library service is just about ready to go on the road. It will make regular visits and provide training for family, friend, and neighbor providers on the reservation. This legislation provides the opportunity to support the White Earth Project, to replicate it in other parts state and on other reservations. Senate File 686 is sensible, practical public policy. Your public libraries are already community gathering places serving families and child care providers. As librarians and our partners in child care take advantage of these proposed grants, we'll be able to expand and enhance the literacy and early learning opportunities we're already providing in communities across the state. Communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Ronka, when I see the book, Good Night, Moon, I haven't read that in 15 years, but I bet I could recite it word for word still.
And that's why you are where you are, Senator.
Yeah. I just read it to me. Yes.
I think he was reading it to his kids.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Samira Bilal-Roby, and I'm the Executive Director with the Early Childhood Resource and Training Center. And, excuse me, my throat is kind of scratchy here. I'd like to share with you what working with family, friend, and neighbors really is like and the benefits of it. We have been doing this work for several years. We have programs that help with English language learners. We do entry-level training. We do CPR first aid. We do home visiting. And two success stories that I can share with you. One is a provider who came to us with no English whatsoever and worked very hard to become a citizen and was so happy that she took our employees with her downtown to be a citizen. We also have our new immigrant family, friend, and neighbors that come to us in entry level with little English. Then we take them through early quality care training, and then we have five of them in our college courses right now. The money that goes through family, friends, and neighbors through many different entities in our communities is so important that not being supported would have repercussions that could be very lasting for the disparities of our children in the community. So I just wanted to share that with you. Hope that my words are strong enough to help us get this legislation. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jean Sanders, and I'm a daycare provider, and I'm here on behalf of the library that came to my home just to express what a joy and what a privilege it has been for that library to pull up in front of my home and for me to take my daycare children out to that library. The things that those children learn on that Readmobile is just a joy and a pleasure just to be able to read, to sing, to laugh, to explore, to dance, so much on that library. And they have taught me as a provider to use not only for the children to use their imagination, but me as a provider to pick up a book and to use my imagination. And just the look on those children's face when you read to them and allow them to use their imagination with those books, it's priceless, it's overwhelming. And it not only puts a smile on their face, but it puts a smile on my face as a provider. I brought a copy of my daughter's midterm report, and my daughter has gotten above average in all of her classes, and I was specifically happy that she had got that in reading. My children love to read, not only my children, but my daycare children, and me being able to teach them how to read, and they all started reading at the age of 2. Now, you may say that's early, but not so. Children love books. You introduce that to them, and they can go anywhere with it. So I encourage you as a daycare provider to pass this grant and give this to the Hennepin County Library, because not just on behalf of my children, but for all the children out there who doesn't get a chance, whose parents will not even pick up a book and read to them. It's very important, and I encourage my parents every night, read to your children. It takes 5-10 minutes. You have that much time, but the children deserve that. And so I just want to thank you for allowing me as a daycare provider to come in to speak, because I think that it's very important. And I came to be heard, and I hope that you heard me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders. I'm glad you came. Do you have anybody else you want to have testify?
No, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make a comment that I'm going to try in the future to bring more people to the table to really give us firsthand kind of information about the practice and the work that is being done every day. And I want to thank the witnesses that I invited today. I just called them this morning because I didn't have people in my list that were actually working with the kids and the providers. And so I wanted to make sure that you hear from them and that if you have any questions that you could please ask them, because they are the experts.
Thank you for coming. And no, I can't think of anything more valuable, especially than parents reading to their kids. It not just for their literacy skills, but also for the parental bonding. It's it's wonderful. Senator Torres-Ray moves Senate File 686 be recommended to pass and referred to Committee on Finance. Is there any discussion on that? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee.
Senator Erickson Rope, Senate File 944.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. I bring to you today Senate File 944. It's a bill having to do with child care service grants in the TEACH program. The first thing I'd like to do is I believe you have before you an amendment. A1 amendment to my bill, and it's actually an author's amendment at this point. I'd just like to put it before you to get my bill in shape.
We'll let it get handed out before we vote on it, but it is author's amendment. The A1 amendment. Okay. Do you want to start explaining the bill, and then we'll add it? Explain the bill with it in the bill.
Okay. Thank you. I'll just run through this briefly. This bill actually lays out a framework for an early childhood professional development registry. It also provides for increased opportunities for professional training for child care providers, and it expands the quality rating system that parents can use to have more information about how to better choose quality child care. We all know that professional development is a key component to quality in early childhood settings, and the research is clear on the benefits of good quality early education. I believe many of you were in the same room with me yesterday listening to Art Rolnick again talk about the benefits of early childhood investments. And whether it's the Federal Reserve Bank or the Perry Preschool Study or the Chicago Parent Studies, The information is clear that the investment in early childhood education is pretty secure. And yet, the professional development system for child care providers is fragmented. Wages for child care providers sometimes are just above being a professional dishwasher. And turnover rates for child care providers are as high as 30% annually. So this bill will address many of those needs. If you look at Section 1, there's only four sections, so just quickly I'll run through that. Section 1 modifies the child care services grants to allow grants to be used in supporting effective teacher-child interactions. Section 2 modifies the Minnesota Office of Higher Education chapter of law and establishes the TEACH program. Section 3 requires the Commissioner of Human Services to implement a redesigned early childhood professional development system, and Section 4 provides for the appropriations. I place the bill before you, and I have with me today Ann Kaner-Roth, who will answer more technical questions on the bill, if you like, as well as, and then Ann, could you introduce the other members sitting here?
Certainly. Senator Erickson Ropes, excuse me, before you move to
you want to deal
to provide testimony, I need you to move your amendment. Yes.
Thank you. I so move the amendment.
Okay. This is amendment. Could you direct us to the amendment? Yeah. Do we have it?
We have it.
Okay. A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment to Senate File 944 as provided to you.
Senator Erickson Ropes is moving the A1 amendment. Are there any questions about the amendment? If not, all of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment carries.
Okay.
It's adopted.
Thank you.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
I'll turn it over to Ann Kaner-Roth.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ann Kaner-Roth, and I'm the Executive Director of Child Care Works. Child Care Works is a statewide coalition of parents and child care providers and other early childhood and school age advocates, all working together to achieve quality, affordable child care for families who need it in Minnesota. And I appreciate the opportunity today to testify on this bill and the next two bills as well. And I appreciate Senator Erickson Ropes' efforts to bring this bill forward today. Since the rest of the agenda today does focus on child care, I wanted just to take a brief moment to provide some context for the bills you'll be hearing. In the child care field, we talk about the three legs of child care that make it work for families who need it. Those three legs are quality, affordability, and accessibility. If those three legs are strong, families can depend on that stool when they need it. If even one of the legs is weak, the stool's functionality is in question, and so it is with child care. When child care is at its full potential, a high-quality yet affordable setting with loving, well-trained caregivers operating in a partnership with parents, we see children thrive and they arrive on the kindergarten doorstep ready to succeed. The bill before you now, Senate File 944, is the quality leg of our three-legged stool, and it is an extremely important component of ensuring that child care providers are well-equipped to operate at full potential. Senate File 944 addresses a number of things all surrounding the quality of child care. It includes a structure for the professional development of child care providers, as well as scholarships to help them gain higher levels of education and wage stipends to help them stay in the field. It allows funds to help providers become licensed and accredited, and it expands the quality rating system pilots that are currently being rolled out by the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. The Departments of Human Services and Education just released a report based on a series of focus groups done with parents late last year regarding what was important to them in their child care setting. The characteristics of highest importance to parents in the focus group was the caregiver's training and experience. So I'd suggest that although these proposals in this bill are highly based on research, that there is qualitative data to show us that this is the direction that parents want the state to pursue as well. With that, I'm going to turn the mic over to Dr. Karen Cadigan, who is standing in for Dr. Catherine Tout, who is meant to be here, to talk a little bit about quality and professional development.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, I'm not technically a doctor yet. I'm happy to be here to testify on this important issue. Karen Cadigan, Director of Outreach and Public Policy at the Center of Early Education and Development at the University of Minnesota. And I've been involved in studying child care quality and professional development issues at a variety of levels. One is very much the ground level. Our center does significant amount of training for child care providers and are always looking for ways to provide effective, affordable professional development for those who care for our youngest citizens. Secondly, I serve on the early childhood work group of the Itasca Project and have been involved in summarizing the landscape of Minnesota and issues related to child care, child quality, education, and outcomes. In some ways, this is a fairly straightforward issue to testify on because from a research perspective, there are two things that we know for sure. There are things that are gray in research sometimes, but two things we know for sure. One is that the quality of environments that young children live and learn in are directly related to what outcomes they have and how happy, healthy, and ready they are for school. That is borne out in multiple national and local studies. Second thing that we know is that what relates to that quality, what predicts that quality, it's the person, it's the grown-up, it's the care provider, the teacher, the parent, whoever the person is who most directly influences the quality and mediates whatever experiences children have. Ms. Kainaroth mentioned, we additionally know from a Minnesota-specific study that parents get this. Parents are most interested in the professional development and training of care providers in choosing quality for their children, and they're interested in getting feedback about how to choose quality in a better way. That is a quick and dirty summary of the research. I'd be happy to answer questions or add detail if needed.
Thank you,
Okay, we'll go on to
Ms. Cadigan, and we know you're going to be a doctor very soon, so we're going to start calling you doctor now. Senator Erickson-Rhodes.
Madam Chair, the next speaker is Kim Stoll, and she's going to speak specifically to Section 1, the Child Care Service Grants.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Kim Stoll. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate File 944. In my capacity as a grants administrator at Resources for Child Caring, I work closely with the Child Care Services Grants. These grants are grants that are available to licensed child care providers, centers, after-school programs, legally exempt child care providers, and family, friend, and neighbor providers. These grants are available on a statewide basis, and the funding is allocated in different regions. Each region in the state has a local grants advisory committee that assists in identifying regional priorities. The grants are then awarded on the identified priorities for items, equipment, training, and these all increase the quality of care in these programs. The child care services grants that have been funded by Resources for Child Caring focus on the priorities that are identified in the metro area. These grants include a multicultural component, which focuses on integrating diversity into child cares and serving diverse communities. A typical request on a grant application includes things like egress windows, fences, cribs, books, educational toys, trainings, computers. The amount of funding that providers request can range between $500 to $10,000. The amount of funding that has been allocated to child care providers in the metro area for this fiscal year was able to fund approximately 400 programs out of the 6,000 programs in the area. Additional funding would provide the opportunity for more programs and children to be impacted by the funding. Throughout the fiscal year, we regularly receive inquiries about the request for additional funding and are unable to meet that need. Child care providers who have received a grant have shared their thoughts on the benefits of the grants program. One child care provider stated, "It made me more aware and accountable to the many possibilities of the educational activities I can do with the children. The grant has also rejuvenated my spirit and love for teaching by giving me an opportunity to purchase excellent resources and tools that make teaching more fun. Among the other things, the process of applying and writing this grant taught me that I can do anything I put my mind to doing. I feel like a more experienced, knowledgeable, and capable person, which in turn helped me to be and feel like a better provider."
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from committee members for the witnesses? No?
Madam
any
Chair.
Comments? Yes.
There are two more witnesses just to.
Okay. Oh, thanks. I didn't know. Please proceed with your
Madam Chair,
other
the
witnesses.
Next speaker is Valerie Peterson, who will address specifically Section 2 of this bill.
Thank you.
And I believe there's
welcome,
a handout.
Ms. Peterson. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Valerie Peterson, and I work for the Minnesota Child Care Resource and Referral Network, administering the Teach and Retain programs. As we've heard in recent testimony here, we all know the importance of early learning programs in preparing children for school. Research has found, as indicated, that consistency and training in teaching staff is a contributing factor to that success. The Teach Early Childhood program is helping teachers become better educated, earn more money, and stay in their classrooms. Teach is a scholarship that helps those working in child care and Head Start programs complete a degree in early childhood education. The vast majority of that scholarship money is paid directly to a Minnesota college for tuition and books. Recipients also receive other supports, including a small travel stipend. Last year, we awarded nearly 200 scholarships to child care providers. On their behalf, we purchased over 2,200 college credits. That's an average of 12 credits per recipient. As a result, these providers saw an average wage increase of 9% and reported a turnover rate of less than 3% as compared with over 30% in the field as a whole. Once a degree is earned, providers qualify to apply for the Retain Grant Program. This program supports child care workers who hold degrees, allowing them to remain working in child care, a traditionally low-paying field. That means less disruption for children as they prepare for success in school. I'd like to introduce Melanie Goetz. Melanie has been a recipient of both a TEACH scholarship and a retained grant through our program.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Goetz.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time. Being a recipient of the TEACH scholarship has had a tremendous impact on me as an early childhood professional. Because of TEACH, I was able to return to school and graduate with a child development degree. The classes that I took gave me the tools that I need to be an effective preschool teacher and to provide the foundation for learning for the children in my class. I also received the training that I need to assist parents with getting their preschoolers ready for kindergarten. Because of my schooling, I am confident that I provide the quality care that parents deserve and expect for their children. I consider myself very lucky to also be a recipient of the retained grant. I love being a preschool teacher, but it's a very low-paying job. Retain has offered me an extra motivation to stay committed to my field. It provides me with a financial incentive that I very much need, and it also shows me that my dedication to children is valued and appreciated by this community. I don't know where I'd be right now if it weren't for Teach and Retain. In a field where turnover rates are high, I have remained at my place of employment for 6 years. That's 6 graduating classes of preschoolers I've seen off to kindergarten. They were ready, and they were eager to learn, and I'm proud to say that I contributed.
Thank you for your testimony.
That concludes our testimony, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Erickson-Robes. Are there any questions for Senator Erickson-Robes? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Erickson-Robes, I do have a couple of questions. One is on page 3, section 3, you indicate that there's a redesign of the early childhood professional development system. So I'm wondering if there are I'm confirming that there is, in fact, something that's in existence today, would be my first question. My second question, have you adequately addressed in this bill, if not that, then what would be better? And my third question, which may or may not be appropriate question for this particular committee, is, but just for my information, I was wondering if there was a current appropriation for this, such that there might be some funds that could be possibly interchanged.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, thank you very much for your question, and I will turn it over to our expert, Ann Kenner-Roth, for response.
Ms. Kenner-Roth.
Madam Chair and Senator Lynch, in answer to the first question in terms of is there a system in place now, I would say that this proposal creates a system where there now are many, many pieces of this, of an early childhood professional development system, probably in quotation marks, that are not very well streamlined or linked. The A1 amendment, sub D1, lays out quite specifically the pieces of the design of this new system, and it's fairly specific in how it lays out what it would look like now. Part of the intent here is to bring together some of the fragmentation that exists right now. In answer to the third question, because I can't remember what the second one was, currently this type of thing is funded strictly out of federal money that comes from a set-aside meant for quality initiatives that comes out of federal and state child care money. So there currently is no state money, to my knowledge, that is appropriated to things like early childhood training. And I'm sorry, I cannot remember the second question.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Erickson-Robes. The A1 amendment, line 1.23, where you talk about higher education institutions. And I wondered if you might be able to offer any insight on how the higher ed institutions feel about this, or if there's some sense of some identified need. You're talking about presenting new programs, it sounds like to me.
Ms. Kenna Roth.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, I will admit that my expertise is fairly limited in this area. There are folks in the room that could answer this much more fully if you'd like. I believe the intent here is to try and align requirements amongst different types of higher education institutions to be able to create for a student to be able to work towards a degree. That's about the end of my knowledge on that piece. Would you like additional testimony at this time on that piece?
Just maybe food for thought, maybe.
Senator Lynch, if I may, I believe that the Department of Human Services already did some work to convene people in the field so that they can come together and really talk about how this system could work. And I know there are some representatives of the Department of Human Services who are here who may wish to let you know, because I know they've been doing that for quite some time to try to bring the people together to figure out how this should work. I don't know if that will be appropriate, but is that? Would you like them to come and let you know what they have been doing? Okay, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Lynch, my name is Deb Swenson-Clatt. I'm the Director of Child Development Services at the Department of Human Services. We're the unit that oversees the child care quality set aside in Minnesota, the federal funding for child care quality, as well as some state funding for child care quality. And with regard to the specific lines in the A1 amendment, we are in the process of, have been for the last 18 months, in the process of working on on planning for redesigning the professional development system for child care providers in Minnesota. We have been working closely with stakeholders in the community and provider organizations to further our goals around the professional development system, moving it from a system that supports completion of hours, of required hours of training each year, to a system more focused on outcomes for providers. One of the parts of the planning that is underway is involvement with the higher education community institutions in Minnesota to think about how to better align our child care training supports with higher education requirements for those in the early childhood. Representative of the MNSCU system sitting on an advisory council and working with us in the thinking around how providers can articulate their training in the higher education system and I think very much looking forward to further discussion with MNSCU, the University of Minnesota, and private colleges, too.
Thank you. Does that answer your question? Thank you, Ms. Swenson-Clatt. I really appreciate that. Are there any other questions for the witnesses or for Senator Erickson-Robes? If not, Senator Erickson-Robes, we need a motion.
Yes, I'd like to move this bill, please. So I would like to move this bill as amended.
Thank you.
I'm not sure exactly where it goes from here.
Senator Erickson-Robes is moving Senate File 944
to the Budget Division.
To move to the again
to
Finance Commission.
Okay.
Any questions? If not, all of those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries. Thank you, Senator Erickson-Robes. Next, we have Senator Higgins, Senate File 771.
And then the last paragraph, the new
review section.
Thank you, Senator Higgins. We're ready when you're ready.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I have Senate File 771 dealing with the inspection of child care centers. Before 2003, if I remember correctly, all child care centers were inspected by the state once, at least once a year. And now it's every other year. What we find is that an annual visit is a best practice, and that we've probably not done ourselves any favor by going to every other year inspections. Quality in child care needs to start with the health and safety of the child care settings. And one of the key roles that the state has in child care is to ensure that the child care centers are safe. And this largely happens through the licensing process. This bill would amend the Department of Human Services Licensing Act to require inspection of child care centers at least annually. It would require the commissioner to inspect family daycare programs at least once a year. And it would require the commissioner to have some conversations with the commissioners of health and education and the counties to develop and present to the legislature recommendations for ways that we can fund each legally unlicensed child care provider at least once. I have several people here who are real experts on this issue, and Kana Roth, I think, will start.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, I'm Ann Kana Roth from Child Care Works, and thank you to Senator Higgins for bringing this important bill forward today. This bill deals with improving the health, safety, and quality of child care sites, both licensed and unlicensed settings. In Senator Erickson Ropes' bill, we talked about quality primarily in terms of provider training and education. This bill in front of you deals with quality at a somewhat more basic health and safety level. The health and safety of children in child care settings is vital, given that Minnesota has one of the highest work participation rates by women in the nation, and that almost three-quarters of moms with young children work in Minnesota. The majority of young children in the state spend some portion of their time in child care settings, whether they are licensed or unlicensed. This bill seeks to ensure more oversight and more resources to child care programs to ensure that they are, at the very least, healthy, safe environments for children. The bill has two major components. The first would move the state from mandating a licensing visit every other year to an annual visit for all licensed child care programs, both centers and in-home family child care. This would bring Minnesota into line with the majority of other states that also require at least an annual licensing visit. Those states include Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and many other neighboring and not so neighboring states. Many states require even more frequent visits. You do have a handout in front of you showing the spread of frequency of licensing visits among states, as well as staff to program ratios. Minnesota actually ranks in the top five of states with high caseloads, translating to less time for licensers to work with programs. The bill also requires the state and the counties to work together to determine a funding allocation from the general fund to accomplish this goal. I'd like to be very clear in that the intent of the bill is not to be an unfunded mandate to counties to do more with less. We do hope with this bill to determine a funding stream from the state to the counties to provide this service. The second component of the bill also deals with childcare settings, but here the bill addresses unlicensed providers caring for children receiving public subsidies from the state through the Child Care Assistance Program. This proposal asks the Departments of Human Services, Health, and Education and the counties to develop recommendations on how best to provide a one-time home visit to these providers. These providers are unregulated in nature, with the state's only interaction with them being a background study. This home visit would be a one-time face-to-face visit, which could include bringing a variety of resources and information to them. We think both of these proposals would take Minnesota a long way in moving towards healthier, safer childcare settings for children. I'd like to point out that this proposal is supported by the Association of Minnesota Family Child Care Licensors, and you have a letter to that extent in front of you. The bill is also supported by statewide associations representing both child care centers and family child care homes. And to that end, the next witnesses will briefly state their support for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next witness.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozeland, and I represent the Minnesota Child Care Association, which is an association of licensed child care centers throughout the state of Minnesota. We'd like to thank Senator Higgins for bringing Senate File 771 forward, and we would like to express our support for it. We believe that Senate File 771 will provide a consistent level of oversight and accountability for all child care programs. We also believe it will help to give parents a level of confidence when choosing quality child care programs that there is an up-to-date, accurate, and consistent information on the programs they are choosing. That was very brief, and I will stand for questions after the other testifiers.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of committee, I am Kathy Baumgard, and I'm a licensed family child care provider. Excuse me. I've been a provider for 18 years, licensed, and in Anoka County, we do have visits with our licensors every year. I assumed that it was the same statewide, so I was surprised to find out that only every two years was what was actually required. We have good relationships with our licensors, and the annual visit really keeps us on our toes. Ours are unannounced, which means we know approximately what month it's going to occur. And it gives us a chance to be sure that our records are up to date, that we have all the enrollment forms, that the children's immunization forms are up to date, that we have all their permission to administer forms for the kids' medication, and even for transporting them, our licensors check that every year then. There are support system. If we have problems with children with child development issues, or if they are developmentally delayed, we can discuss it with our licensors, and our licensors can actually observe them on site and give us references on getting the kids into intervention services. If we have conflicts with parents, we can get references from them for mediation services locally. If we have behavior problems, they can give us resources on behavior guidance programs. We have a proactive intervention program in our county, and our licensors actually carry with them the dates that these trainings are available for us to attend, which parents attend too. Not all providers are online, and our licensors bring us new forms for us so that we can be up to date and have the current forms, such as the current immunization forms. They have information on car seat clinics for providers who transport the children to be sure that their car seats are properly installed. They bring information about conferences that are available, about how to contact our local family child care associations so that we are involved with the network of other providers. And some of the licensors carry the 11-minute video that we're required to watch every year on shaken baby syndrome, and the providers may watch it right there on their home, so that the licensor knows that the provider has watched it. So I would like to thank you for listening to me, and we do support it to have an annual visit, and I do think that it should be every year statewide.
Thank you for your testimony.
Madam Chair, we'll stand for questions.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
There's one more witness to speak to the unlicensed provider component of the bill.
Okay, please proceed.
Madam Chair, Karen Cadigan from the University of Minnesota. This is an interesting issue to testify on because it actually, along the continuum of what kinds of environmental modifications and professional development and safety issues impact kids' outcomes, this seems to me to be an incredibly low bar, although it is viewed as progress for Minnesota to move forward from where we are. So I think my main comment, in addition to the comment I made on the previous testimony, that we know for certain that early environments directly impact kids' outcomes, I just want to show a spotlight on the fact that this progress is related to the standard largely for health and safety, which is good, but that I think it's important to consider, is that enough? Is that really all we want as a bar? Is that the highest bar we can set for the care of children during this really essential developmental phase?
Thank you, Ms. Cadigan. Do members have any questions for the witnesses or for Senator?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Higgins,
Senator Johnson, excuse me.
I do support the concept, but there's no money attached to this bill, as far as I can see.
Is that too? Mm-hmm. Senator Higgins? Senator Higgins, Senate Council can
Senate
speak
Council
to that.
Can help us? Okay.
Yes.
Senator, generally, the bill is sent to finance and then the appropriation and the fiscal note is done at that point.
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
It would still be interesting to know what it's going to take for those annual inspections. Did we at one time do annual inspections and then we got rid of them or something?
Madam Chair, I can't hear a word anybody saying.
I know, the mics are all screwed up today.
Yeah, I think they're not working very well.
Can people speak up?
Since the department already does an inspection, I don't know how often, they have an idea of how much does it cost to do it now. So if we change, would they have an idea of how much would it cost to change this? We don't have a fiscal note yet. Mm-hmm. But is it appropriate to call the department to tell us? I know that we have some members of the department to. Do we have anybody who can speak about that issue?
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Also, it sounded like in your testimony at one time we did do annual inspections.
We did. Didn't we?
Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, the law has been consistent in requiring a visit every other year.
That's why we were lost.
That got suddenly very loud. Prior to many of the cuts that we saw in 2003, the counties and the state chose to do a visit on an annual basis because they felt it was best practice. As the resources became more limited, they went to what the law required, which was an annual visit. Madam Chair, also in response to the cost, just to point out that the state has responsibility over licensing visits for childcare centers, and the counties have responsibility over licensing visits for family childcare homes. And so the department may be able to respond to the cost of an additional visit for centers.
In order to
come up with a fiscal note for the whole bill, I believe that staff would probably need to be in touch with counties to see which of them are doing annual visits, which as the testifier mentioned, some counties do annual visits, and some counties are not able to due to resources.
Thank you for the clarification. Senator Johnson, do you feel
Yeah, my concern is still that we're not discussing money, and I'd like to know what kind of money this could entail. Right now, my county is doing it. We make it a law, then how many other counties aren't doing it.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, we usually deal with the money aspect in Senator Berglund's finance division. And between this committee and a hearing in that committee, we'll get the fiscal note.
And Madam
until
Chair,
then, we don't have a real number for it.
The question goes beyond just the money. I'd like to know which counties to be doing this and which counties aren't doing it.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I think that when the department tries to put the fiscal note together, one of the things they'll have to do is figure out what counties are already doing it and what counties aren't. And that'll be a piece of the information that they'll need to do an accurate fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Hayes. Senator Johnson.
And report back to this committee.
Do you want it to
please.
Referred back to this committee?
Well, not referred, just to report back.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, maybe we can just get you a copy of the fiscal note when we get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Madam Chair, I do have
Senator
a question
Dahl.
On that same regard. I think we talked about this earlier, but the inspections are now every 2 years. Is that correct? And now, has there been a problem that would necessitate again? That we'd need to go back to an annual. That's what I was I'm curious again if you'd clarify that for me.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senator Dahl, there hasn't been a specific problem, but I think the from the perspective of licensed child care centers, annual visits would provide some uniformity to members of the public and parents who are choosing licensed child care centers. For instance, if one center in 2005 had an inspection and a licensing report, and then they were comparing it with another center in December of 2006, the report is somewhat older, and it doesn't allow for them to provide comparability or up-to-date information on what actually is happening in that center and are they meeting the requirements and expectations of the state of Minnesota in the care they provide.
Madam Chair,
Senator
so do the regulations and rules from the state change fairly often, or are they, and that would necessitate that we'd have to do that on an annual basis? I mean, as I'm not sure that why we would need to go to an annual basis if the biannual is working fairly well at this point, unless there was a problem with a particular, you identified there was a problem, and then I can understand wanting to follow up maybe on an annual or even in a semi-annual basis. But if the rules change, then I can see needing to do it on an annual basis. But if not, I guess I'm not following why we would need to increase them to every year.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, I know before 2003's budget cuts, the centers were inspected each year. And when we were trying to find money in Senator Berglund's division, by cutting the number of inspections in half, we saved, on paper, a lot of money. And and yet we know that the best practices, that it is best for the children and the parents to have those child care centers inspected at least once a year. So if there is something going on that's adversely affecting the children, it isn't something that they find out 2 years later.
Okay.
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate that. What I'm thinking is, though, that they move to one every 2 years to save money, and that seems to be working, that unless someone came in and said we have a problem or our child has been endangered, then would raise red flags and then, of course, necessitate more visits. But it seems that the best practice is, I don't know that that I'm following that, I guess, that I think that they've moved to the biannual and it's been working, that you haven't said there's any problems with it. So and it has saved money, correct?
Ms. Skinner-Roth.
Madam Chair and Senator Dahl, I think there are two functions, at least, to the licensing visits and the relationship that Ms. Baumgart spoke about between the licensor and the child care provider, whether it's the center or the family daycare home. Part of it is regulatory, and it is, I guess, less the issue that the rules change frequently, and I think more to ensure that things are on the up and up, that things are healthy and safe and in shape, really, in relation to what the rules are for them. But the other part of it, I think, is the relationship that's built between the licensor and the provider. The licensor, obviously, that's their job, is to work with a lot of different providers. And in a good situation, which many providers talk about in terms of their relationship with their licensor, the licensor really is able to be a resource to them, to help them in their business, particularly for the family child care providers, which in some instances are quite isolated and don't have as much support as they might, particularly in some of the rural areas. In response to the question about is there a problem, I think that you couldn't necessarily say that there is a widespread problem here that's obvious. But I would imagine that most members of the committee can think of an instance of reports in the newspaper or in the press of very unfortunate incidents that have happened in child care programs. Certainly there are those, and I certainly am not suggesting that's the majority of programs are having problems. But I think The hope here is to provide closer oversight, a closer relationship, more resources to providers so that we don't get to those situations where we see these very unfortunate situations in providers' homes and centers.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. I'd just like to get one of those fiscal notes if I could, too, please. Thanks.
And also, just to make sure people know, the director of the licensing division for the Department of Human Services, Mr. Jerry Kerber, is here. If you want to ask some questions, feel free to visit with him. We're kind of tied with time, but there are some members of the Department of Human Services I would like to offer the members, I think, the opportunity to have a conversation with them so that you can ask the questions directly, because there is a difference between centers and homes and who licensed what and the county, and probably it'll be great if you could ask that question. They will be available to answer your questions. Yes.
Madam Chair, if I could just add one thing. In somewhat response to Senator Dahl's question, some of the things that happen in a licensing visit in a child care center, they're not just looking at the center to make sure it's clean and that they have adequate space for the children. They're also checking the staff qualifications of the teachers and the teacher's aides. They're checking the student-to-staff ratio programs. The child care centers are required to have a child care program plan on the development and assessment of the child's progress in the center. And I think it's valuable for parents to know that that kind of information is being reviewed annually to ensure the quality of the programming that the children are receiving.
Thank you. Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a question along that. Is the assumption here that these kinds of things wouldn't be done without the inspection regime? I mean, part of what you're talking about seems to me to be, if I'm running that business, I would certainly have every interest in promoting my business to make sure that my clients had knowledge of what I was doing and how I was doing it. And it would seem to me that the inspection regime wouldn't necessarily be critical to making sure that was to occur. Is part of the assumption here that the only way this happens is if there's an inspection that makes sure that happens? Is that
Senator Higgins, I would like to suggest that you call Mr. Kerber, because I think he might be able to answer very directly to some of these questions, if you
Madam
want.
Madam Chair, you're the chair. Call him on up.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jerry Kerber, and I'm the Director of the Licensing Division of the Department of Human Services. I can try and answer any specific questions.
Senator Hahn has a question. Would you like to repeat your
sure.
question,
Thank
Senator
you,
Hahn?
Madam Chair. I'll try to repeat it in a way that you might be able to respond to. But I guess one question I would have is under the current licensing or inspection regime, are there a lot of violations found? Is it your experience that the kinds of things that you're checking for just aren't going to get done unless there's inspection, or in most cases, are you finding things compliant with what the inspectors would expect?
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, maybe I'll just clarify one thing about when the change occurred before I answer that specifically. We were doing annual inspections in child care centers up until about 1993. It was around 1993 or thereabouts that the law was changed to allow up to 2-year inspection cycle. And it was definitely a result of some budget constraints, and there were some staffing decreases. In more recent years, we were unable to meet the 2-year inspection requirement, and the 2005 legislative session awarded us an appropriation increase to get up to a 2-year inspection cycle. And so that's where we are today. And so as a result of the increased appropriation from the 2005 legislative session, we are now doing inspections every 2 years. And to answer your question more specifically, Senator Hahn, certainly there are centers that are virtually always in compliance, and then there are centers that struggle. And so it's kind of across the board. There are some centers that that we find a number of citations and even take a licensing action due to noncompliance. If it ends up being chronic or over time, we have to look at the nature, chronicity, and seriousness of noncompliance. So we take a number of licensing actions each year. But then there are other centers who operate very nicely within the constraints of the regulations and actually have no citations. So it's across the board. There's about 1,600 child care centers out there.
And Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Kerber. So if you got 1,600 child care centers that you're inspecting, and you say that occasionally you've had to take action that might cause, for example, closing one down, how what percentage-wise, what is the frequency of that kind of activity where you're finding things that are so serious or so chronic that require a intervention?
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, closure of a child care center is fairly rare, but I think we've probably averaged about one a year. Other licensing actions that we have, certainly we issue correction orders. They're sort of the bread and butter of what we do. We can make a license conditional for a year or two if somebody doesn't seem to be adequately motivated to comply with the regulations. We fine facilities probably 100 times a year for noncompliance, particularly with background studies that are required. So all told, we probably take somewhere, close to 150 licensing actions a year in child care centers, I would guess, somewhere between 125, 150 in there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. And I'd like to go back to some of my original questions. What I'm concerned, I realize this isn't the Budget Committee, but I'm concerned about passing out language without money attached to it. I mean, we've done it before, an unfunded mandate. And I'd like to know who's going to pay. Are the counties going to pay? Is the state going to pay? And I would like to know how much it's going to cost.
Well, Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, the intent here is for the state to pay for this, not for the counties to pay for it. No fiscal note at this time, so I'm not sure how much that would cost at this point.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for the witnesses or for Senator Higgins? If there are no further questions, Senator Higgins, would you like to present a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 771 be recommended to pass and be referred to Finance.
On that motion, all of those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Thank you
motion
very much.
Carries. Thank you, Senator Higgins. We're going to have to move very fast. Oh, I have an announcement, and I have asked Mr. Goldstein to please make that announcement. Mr. Goldstein, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to alert members of the committee that on Wednesday, March 7th, a week from today, this committee, Health, Housing, and Family Security, will be co-hosting a joint hearing on gambling addiction with the state and local government committee. It will be held in this room. It will immediately follow our regularly scheduled committee hearing at 12:30, so it will not be in lieu of that hearing. We recognize that not all members will be able to attend because of other conflicts. But you will also be getting an email with details of that event. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Linda Schott, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, there's an amendment that would put the shape, if someone would move it, put the shape, it in the shape I would like to discuss it.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Prentice-Sullen.
Madam Chair, I'd move the A1 amendment to set a file 75, is that correct? 754.
754. Okay, all of those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Sorry. Senator Scheid.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, I know that you deal with these issues all the time. I frankly haven't sat on a committee that deals with as many of these kinds of issues, but I did serve on the Early Childhood Committee, which had these issues in front of it in the last few years. Of course, you know, now there is no separate Early Childhood Committee, and I think the issue has always been bifurcated. It's been part here and part there during the duration of that that Early Childhood Committee. And I really probably don't need to talk to you about the need for child care and child care assistance. But it seems to me the discussion goes back. We started taking it seriously with welfare reform and the fact that Minnesota has so many two-parent working families, either maybe the largest number in the country, first or second, I think maybe first. And now today we know how important quality child care is. And we even hear some evidence that quality early child care is beneficial to children getting ready for school, getting ready to learn. And so I hope that this legislature, starting with this committee, will take seriously getting us back to being able to afford that opportunity for more families. We really decimated child care assistance program start in 2003. We managed to piece back, I think, Ms. Kaner-Roth told me, about not quite half, maybe, of the funding that was removed there. But this bill consolidates, and I can go through it, but I want to tell you essentially what it does is consolidate the various child care assistance programs. So there's MFIP, the transition year, which is when you're off MFIP but getting ready to go to basic sliding fee. So those three pieces, MFIP, transition year, and basic sliding fee, would be brought together and held to the same standard, or the criteria would be the same for each of those funding. It has not been the same in the past, and you can see stricken language, and it starts actually in Article 1 on page 1, and you'll see what we've done is say that we would provide, well, household income. We would provide child care for people with household incomes less than or equal to 75% of the state median income. Ms. Kaner-Roth can perhaps explain a little bit better than I why that's technically better or why it's good to move in that direction, but I want to point out that that does that because the criteria was different before. So then Section 2, which starts on page 2, is has to do with, now does this have to do with, no. This has to do with a deferral period. I believe right now is it 30 days. And if you have a change in income, for example, working some overtime hours throws you out of qualifying for child care assistance, I'm not sure what happens to you now. Do you get through? You get thrown off. You may lose your spot. You may lose your place. And right now there are over 2,800, or about 2,800 families, I think, waiting for child care assistance. So it's rather easy to lose that spot. And this would give a 60-day deferral period for that change in income where you're ineligible, and you would go on paying your copay, you would go on and holding your place, I think, right? And then on page 2, going to Section 3, that would ask the commissioner to develop a new family copayment schedule for families, but the fee would not exceed 10% of the family's income. And then that copayment that's 10%, based on 10% of the family income, could be reduced another 10%, well, not another, but be reduced by 10% if the child care provider they use is licensed, and then another 10% reduction if the child care provider that they use has been approved for the differential because they're accredited, because it's been deemed quality child care setting. Then I think that Section 4 is beyond my technical expertise. And that's the rate freeze. That lifts the rate, freeze, the reimbursement for the providers. So that was one piece of what had happened. Not only was the eligibility lowered for us receiving assistance, but also reimbursement rates were frozen or cut back, frozen then brought back a little bit, I think, for the providers. But so that does that. Article 2 has to do with consolidating the sliding fee program, bringing in also the MFIP and the transitional year into one state forecasted child care program, so we would always know what we needed in funding to continue funding at the level that meets the need. I know that there's, well, I think I'll turn it over to Ms. Kaner-Roth, but I hope that that isn't too disjointed, and I hope you understand what the bill does. But it's extremely important, I think, to as we look at what, of course, a lot of the public thinks is a surplus. And I just would say to my colleagues, before we start spending new money, let's look at reinstating and fixing some of the damage that we've done in the last few years, and this would be a really important part of that.
Thank you, Senator Shahid, and we are just delighted that the chair of the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee is here to advocate for this.
If there's anything I can share about that committee later.
Thank you. Ms. Kaner-Roth, please.
Madam Chair and members, again, thank you for allowing me to testify on this final bill, Senate File 754, and many thanks to Senator Shahid for bringing this bill forward. Senate File 754 represents both the affordability and the access legs of our three-legged stool. The bill highlights the wide acknowledgement by child care advocates that the Child Care Assistance Program, once a well-designed and model program, no longer works well for families in Minnesota, and it is in need of serious reform. I'll speak just a moment about what might be obvious, low-income families' need for assistance paying for child care. As I've already stated today, most parents today are in the workforce, and thus most children are in child care settings. Child care is extremely expensive. DHS, in their cost of care report, stated that full-time child care costs can exceed $12,000 per year for one child. For families just above eligibility for child care assistance, and that would be a family of three making about $30,000 a year or at about 180% of the federal poverty guidelines, child care typically costs about a third of their income, more than their housing costs usually. In 2003, the legislature made drastic changes to the child care assistance program, and you have a report that Child Care Works and the Children's Defense Fund put together called Missed Opportunities that looks at some of those in more detail. But briefly, some of the changes included significantly lowering eligibility for child care assistance from 75% of the state median income, which equates to about 290% of the federal poverty guidelines, to 175% of the federal poverty guidelines, or about 44% of the state median income. This brought Minnesota's ranking nationwide from 5th in the nation to 42nd in the nation, and you have a bright pink handout that shows not the ranking specifically, but among states what eligibility looks like for child care assistance. Parent copays were increased, and though in 2005 they were reduced somewhat, they still are capped at 18% of a family's gross income, even though the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services sets 10% of income spent on child care as affordable. Reimbursement rates for child care providers were frozen in 2003 at the 2001 rate. Although originally meant to be frozen only through one biennium, they have remained essentially frozen ever since. Since then, rates were increased by 1.75% one year and 6% the following year, but the state's reimbursement rates remain well below the market rate. This creates a significant deterrent for child care providers to care for child care assistance children. Since 2003, we have tracked some of the impacts to families and providers, including a loss of over 1,000 child care providers across the state, an increase in parents reporting that they now had to take whatever care that they could get, from 8% in 2001 to 29% in 2004, 11,000 fewer children receiving assistance, and waiting lists which have exceeded 5,000 families in two-year waits just in the past year and now hover around 2,900 families statewide. Senate File 754 addresses these problems systemically. The bill would create one consolidated child care assistance program that would be guaranteed for all eligible families. It would restore the original eligibility level to 75% of the state median income and would cap parent copays at no more than 10% of their gross income. It adds a financial incentive for families to choose high-quality providers through an even lower copayment. It lifts the provider reimbursement rate freeze and offers solutions to problems created by eliminating the part-day rate, implementing a too stringent absent day policy, as well as allowing more continuity of care for the children of students and shift workers. With that, Madam Chair, I'd like to move to the rest of the testifier panel. There are many folks who would have liked to testify in support today, but in the interest of time, we've tried to limit the testimony. Instead, you do have in front of you a letter of support that's been signed by over 75 organizations in Minnesota. Thank you again for allowing me to testify, and the next witness will be Deborah Schlick.
Madam Chair, I was neglectful in not explaining then also what we did with the amendment. You may, if members want to look at it, I don't know if Ms. Roth, Kana Roth, mentioned absent days or not, but this has to do, if you're absent, there's a 25-day absent limit on receiving child care assistance, and you'll be pulled off eligibility if you go over that. I have some personal experience with a child who lived with us for a number of years, and in the last school year did miss nearly that many days just in being ill. I think she had 4 upper respiratory infections through the winter, and it can happen. It may seem excessive, and it was for a child who hadn't had any illness until suddenly her immune system must have been suppressed, and she, you know, did that. So her dad was receiving child care assistance and was extremely concerned, and in fact, I think for a while he had to pay something extra for her child care. She, and then, well, I won't go into any more detail, but you can see. So what we did was, did we take that to? We've allowed that it can, if you have an medical reason, and it does tell you there, it can be the provider who sends the child home. Maybe they have a fever, diarrhea, whatever, and they're sent home. They could verify it, or a teacher, or obviously a doctor could verify, and it wouldn't count against the absent days. So,
thank you, Senator Shy. Welcome.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Deborah Schlick. I'm the Executive Director of the Affirmative Options Coalition. Our members are 50 organizations from around the state of Minnesota, direct service organizations serving low-income Minnesotans, faith-based networks, and anti-poverty advocacy organizations. Our coalition believes that if this state is going to create opportunities for families to move out of poverty, work has to be possible and work has to pay. Child care assistance is a key ingredient to making work possible. For that reason, I'm here to urge you to support Senate File 754. And I know your time is short, so just a couple of key points. Our roots as a coalition are in welfare to work advocacy. And I've had the chance to speak to this committee around welfare to work policy issues. This is very much related, and in a couple of key ways. First of all, that if welfare-to-work goals of helping families move off welfare and stay off welfare are to succeed, as much has to happen outside the program as happens within the policies of the program. Since 2004, the Minnesota Department of Human Services has surveyed families applying for cash assistance in initially 7 sample counties, now 8 sample counties. The most recent survey released in December 2006 indicated that child care-related problems are the second most common reason that parents with children younger than 6 apply for cash assistance, and the third most common reason that all parents with children apply for cash assistance. The 4 previous surveys showed very similar results. So one key message is that a strong child care program is one way you keep a smaller welfare-to-work program. The other thing is that the consolidation of the programs allows families who are moving off of welfare into work to not have to change from the welfare program, the cash child care assistance program for those on MFIP, to the child care assistance program for those in their first year off of assistance, to finally the basic sliding fee program, and each with a slightly different procedure, slightly different policies. And finally, to speak to the rate freeze issue, which also has a direct bearing on the ability of this state to hit its work participation rate for the TANF block grant and to avoid penalties. If families cannot secure child care that they can afford, the state cannot require them to participate in work activities while on MFIP, and yet must count them in the number of families they report to the federal government. With the rate freeze, the state has started issuing child care assistance that does not meet the market cost of that care. and create some risk for the state in meeting its work participation rate. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the members of the committee? I have a question for both of the witnesses that are testifying, and I would like both to answer, please. We are going to have to make some tough choices in a few days, and there are several proposals about what we should do with the limited funding that we have for this area. And some proposals that are coming to us are advocating for grants or scholarships for children so that they can apply, the families can apply themselves. You are talking to us about the need to provide funding for subsidies and to continue to fund the programs that we have in place today. What is your sense of how the community perceives this? You are working with parents and you're working with families right now. What should be the priority? Do we put money into programs that give parents access to that money directly, or do we put the funding into the programs that currently exist in the state of Minnesota?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I must say that I don't envy your position in trying to make that determination. From the perspective of a parent, they are looking for help, and they need help paying for childcare, and their children need to be in good quality childcare because those families are working. I don't think to a parent the particular design of the program is as important to them as that the help is substantial, that it is enough to pay the bill so that they have consistent care that they can afford for their child and that they have choice amongst programs to find one that meets their needs and meets the needs of the children. So I'm sorry if that sounds like I'm not exactly answering your question, but I do think from the parents' perspective that if the assistance is there, that the structure of the program, whether it's a scholarship or whether it's a child care assistance grant or some other mechanism through Head Start or something else, I'm not sure that the difference would be as clear to them as long as they are receiving help and the help is adequate and allows them a variety of choice.
Thank you. Do you have?
I don't know if I have much to add to that, Madam Chair and committee members. I think only to clarify that the child care assistance program puts money in the hands of families to pay for their child care bills. So I think it is about how that money gets out there and whether the legislature finds one more effective than the other.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, there are a couple of other people who would like to testify.
And we have some questions.
Have some more questions, okay.
Did we have?
Well, Senator Burke, do you have a question? Until the testimony is over.
Okay, if you could. We are kind of running out of time, so I would like to ask that we please move quickly. Go ahead, Senator.
Is it Sandy? Is it Trossen? And if Amanda Tyrell is here, you might as well come up as well. They promised to listen fast.
Thank you. Please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Sandy Gallino Trossen. I'm from St. Cloud, Minnesota, and I'm a licensed K-12 teacher, a former licensed child care provider of 12 years, and a current substitute for many providers in the St. Cloud area. I'm the secretary of the Stearns-Benton Child Care Association, and I'm an advocate for kids. Have you ever felt the frustration of having car trouble and being stranded in your car with no money and no cell phone? That's how parents who can't afford childcare feel. With the low wages parents earn, there is not enough to pay for quality care of their children and still go to work or school. Childcare assistance is a vital program that needs to be continued and increased. Parents who use this program are trying to better themselves and better their economic situation so they can be independent and not have to utilize other programs. As a provider, I've seen single parents and sometimes two-parent families lose their jobs, have to drop out of school and turn down chances for a better job because they can't afford childcare due to childcare assistance cuts. Without childcare, parents can't work.
My own daughter's copay for child care assistance has gone up tremendously. It tripled in 1 month. She took on a new job for 1 month, but now she has less money and is working more and sees her child less. Why work more and try to get ahead when you end up with less money? And what does this do to a child? Family child care providers bond with children in a home setting. Children thrive in a home environment of learning and loving. Loss of funding causes loss of ability for parents to pay for a child to remain in their environment. Children are disconnected with their families and learning environment, and their security of having a daily routine to prepare for kindergarten. Senate File 754 increases the eligibility of the basic sliding fee program to 75% of the state median income and will help parents afford stable and quality care. I've seen many of my fellow child care providers struggle themselves and make sacrifices of their own families because of the freeze in child care assistance rates and higher parent copays. For example, a provider I know in St. Cloud mostly takes subsidized children. Since 2003, parent copays for the subsidy program have skyrocketed, but the parents don't actually have the cash in hand to meet the high payments. So my friend regularly loses money from her parents, who just can't come up with the money they are supposed to. This bill has the right approach. Cap parent copays at a reasonable level. Please support Senate File 754. Increase and continue funding to the CCAP program is a win-win situation, which will better the lives of children, their families, providers, teachers, and the economy. Parents can work and stay at a job to better their economic situation while children thrive in learning, loving, and social environments. Providers can continue providing quality care to help families and continue to nurture our most valuable resources, our children.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Madam Chair and Senators. My name is Amanda. I live in Minneapolis. I work two jobs, and I have a wonderful 2.5-year-old boy named Johnny. I'm also a parent who receives child care assistance. However, the process has been difficult and unpleasant. At the time when my fiancé, Johnny's daddy, and I first decided that we need to find child care and assistance for child care, one of us were either working or at college classes. We wanted not only a place to oversee his physical well-being, but also a place to nurture his social, educational, and emotional development. We were on a waiting list for about a year and a half just to receive an application, and with persistent calling and constantly checking on our status, we eventually received an application. By the time Johnny was over 2 years old, we were finally approved to receive assistance. By this time, it felt difficult to transition my toddler into a new surrounding than if I could have done it when he was a baby. And as everyone knows, children are the future, and if Johnny could have been in a structured educational environment for the earlier years of his life, he could be essentially at a more advanced level of social, emotional, and educational development. But Johnny is smart, and he is a good kid, and I am just glad he has the opportunity to be at school and around other kids his age and around teachers who foster early learning. Once we had the assistance, we found it difficult to keep the assistance, one reason being our copay. It is high, and it's almost half of our rent payment. Another reason is it's difficult to keep assistance because we are still trying to keep up with the times when child care assistance won't cover care for Johnny, and we end up having to pay out of pocket and pay the full price and late fees on the care that's not covered. For instance, when my fiancé was on a Christmas break from college and not working at the time, child care assistants said they didn't pay because one of us wasn't involved in an eligible activity, so we ended up paying maximum payment plus late fees incurred from not knowing we weren't covered. We paid out of pocket up until January 17th, but we were still charged our full copay from child care assistance for the whole month of January. But there was no specific information communicated to us on paper or by mouth that this situation would happen. We just want what's best for our children and for all children. Reducing waiting periods and lowering copays will help more children get early care. Children are the future, and making it easier for parents to get care for children will help the future because it's never too early to educate, which is why I and many other parents intend for their children, and some of us just need a little more help. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any other questions from the members of the committee? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Scheid. And I want to ask a little bit of a strange question, maybe.
Oh.
I hope it's not too strange, but it's not directly about the content of your bill, but more, I guess, the bill's child care policy. And I guess I'm trying to get a sense maybe from you or your witnesses about the general direction that we should take with respect to child care and the policy of the state of Minnesota. And the question is just this. There was a time when structured child care was really not very prevalent. There was a time when families, one parent would work and one would not work, and that was pretty much the norm. And a lot of that has changed for a variety of reasons, which has led to the need of finding ways to provide care for children outside of the home. And my question is, which is the better way to do this? Are we better off trying to encourage people to have one parent stay home with children, or are we better to find ways to encourage and facilitate the care for children outside of the home? And I ask that one of the things, and Senator Torres raised on this, we talked with the Early Childhood Caucus about the kinds of criteria that make up good child care. And you read through that list, and you read through it, and you say, well, that's what good parents do. And is it possible to replicate good parenting in an institution, no matter how good it is or no matter how, you know, motivated it is to do that? So just as a general policy, are we better off trying to go down this path more and more, or should we find ways to say, how do we do that? It's kind of a crazy question, I know, but just your thoughts.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, it really isn't that strange a question, because I think about it. I'm sitting here. My children had me at home until they went to kindergarten, and I loved that. And when my next-door neighbor had to go back to work after her children were born a few years ago, I cried because she was upset because she didn't want to have to do that. You know, if I could wave a magic wand, I'd say that one parent, whichever one, would earn enough money that the other parent could stay home if that's what they chose to do. But you've heard from somebody who's a student and who's raising a child, and I think that's admirable, and to provide a better life for herself and her, to be husband and her child, they will, you know, have more success, I think, as long as they're able to have help now when they need it. So what was good for me isn't going to be what's possible for my grandchild if and when my son and daughter-in-law ever present me with one. I know that, you know, that they won't, one of them is not going to be able to stay home with them, but I will be the world's oldest grandmother, you know, I swear. But I wish that people had more choices, and I think an awful lot of people really don't have those choices. And sure, I think probably the best thing would be if both mom and dad could be there all the time. But, you know, I like the way we did it, but I don't think it's possible for very many people today.
Thank you, Senator Scheid. I believe that we have to move from this room because the Education Committee is coming in.
Madam Chair,
unless you have
a
pressing question. Okay. Senator Higgins, could you present the motion, please?
Well, finance.
Finance.
And I think that will they ask for a fiscal note, Madam Chair?
Yes.
They'll request that, right?
Mm-hmm.
There may be.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 754, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to Finance.
Okay, on that motion, all of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries.
Madam Chair,
thank you. Thank you. And this meeting is adjourned. Thanks.
See, I take a hint.
The best kind of witnesses, I'll tell you, people who live in the real world.
Yeah.